Peace and love. Peace and love.
Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
You know what I am? I'm a housewife that figured it out.
Wow, 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 wow!
And now, here's the host of Good Things Radio, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio. Well, hello. My name is Brooke Taylor, a housewife who has not figured it out. So glad you're here. This is episode number 161. It is going to be one of the most jumpin', jam-packed shows of the season. It's a follow-up to last week's episode, The Favorite Things, just a few last week, but you are the best, as per usual. Lots of feedback, input with some really cool additions to the list. So this is going to be a part two, and I brought in some experts to help, which is really exciting. I know you're going to love it. First is Monk Manual, an innovative, fantastic new 90-day planner system. There's a reason why the planner industry is so big, but when you marry it to monasticism, in the contemplative cadence of religious life, you've got a hit. Created and started by Stephen Lawson. And we'll get the whole scoop. Katie McIntyre from Monk Manual is joining us on the program. And not only will she tell us about it, but also a special exclusive promotional discount just for you, only for Good Things Radio listeners. So we'll tell you about that. Also, my friend Colleen Kessler, an educator, an author, popular speaker, she joins us. Her website is Raising Lifelong Learners. And so her expertise is just that. Part of that, though, comes from having materials that will help our kids succeed and grow outside of their appetite for video games or social media, but the love of learning that comes from really cool creative ideas. And she has her own favorite things picks to add to the list as well. So I hope you haven't finished your Christmas shopping yet. Really grateful for both of these guests for kind of dropping everything they were doing so that we could get this out. So let's jump in. So this is what I love about community. It's why word of mouth is so important when it's driven by real life experiences, real people, a friend, a sister in Christ, somebody you know, and sincere excitement. And so that's what happened with this innovative, game-changing product that was introduced to me. I received a message from Caitlin, one of our GTR listeners. She messaged me, said she heard the show, loved the favorite things, but had to add the Monk Manual, and that we should include that in the favorite things. So first off, she had me at the name because that's just awesome. And then when I looked at the concept and the actual layout of what the Monk Manual is, I wanted to bring it to you. And that's what we're doing, not just in concept, but in voice, in heart, with someone from Monk Manual actually joining us. And in the interest of full disclosure, this was taped with my sweet darling daughter running in and out of the room. So you're going to be able to hear that. I hope she makes you smile, her little Carolina cameo. But that just gives you an indication of how excited I am about this. Normally, my studio hours are when the kids are at school and the house is quiet. But we just had to drop everything and get this on for you in case you're looking for a Christmas gift and wanted to share. So really happy to welcome Katie McIntyre all the way from New Jersey to tell us about Monk Manual. Hi, Katie.
Hi, it's great to be here. And I'm really excited to kind of dive into the Monk Manual and tell you a little bit more about it.
Thank you, because I know for me it was brand new. And for a lot of our listeners hearing this, I think we can just maybe start with a couple of the specs, and then I'm going to ask you to paint the picture from there. On the website, it says it's a daily planner. It's a system for planning. It's a full page spread for every day. Beautiful leather bound, which has me right there, that smooth, soft leather. And it covers a 90-day period. And what it says on the website is it's backed by science and designed for pretty much anyone. Is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later on. But just going by what the specs are, I'm a kind of a planner snob, to say the least. So when Stephen came to me with the idea of the Monk Manual, my initial reaction was, okay, it sounds cool, but I have a system that works, but I completely underestimated the full page spread and what that actually meant. I had never really noticed that other planners that I use, everything's kind of crunched in there. Stephen really took the time, and Stephen's the founder of the Monk Manual. I guess I should add that in. He took the time to really do a full page spread for every single day. So that means you have a left side and a right side for every day, every week, and every month. And the benefit from that really comes when you start looking back on your weeks and on your months.
Well, right, because it is a practical system of organization, but it's also for the heart and the spirit as well, the contemplative side, the goal setting. And so you mentioned Stephen Lawson. He is the founder, the creator, and he shares in the mission statement page, this is need-based. It came out of his own need. So why is that? How did it come about? I can guess based on the title that it's also, you know, that connection with monasticism.
Oh, 100%. So Stephen is somebody from the outside, he looked like he had it all. A full-time job. He was always had that entrepreneurial projects going on the side. Beautiful wife, family. He has two boys and a new daughter. So he was running on all cylinders. From the outside, he looked like probably the most productive guy you know. And he would go to bed every night just staring at the ceiling, nauseous to his stomach because he felt like he wasn't moving forward. Even when you're productive, chomping through your to-do list, you still don't feel adequate a lot of times at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And the reasoning for that, he found out, kind of because he had to find out, he was just completely burnt out, is because he wasn't doing and focusing on the most important things. So oftentimes we think productivity is just chomping through a long to-do list, but really it's about doing less. It's doing the most important things and only the most important things well. And when you have that mind shift and kind of shift your paradigm to see the world as focusing on the most important things, oftentimes that's when the biggest breakthroughs happen. And that's when you actually get your best work done.
So for him, he realized, I have to engineer a better system for my days. And
100%, yeah.
That came from looking, studying monasticism.
Mm-hmm. So there was kind of like a trifold here. It didn't start with monasticism. It started with studying. He did a deep dive into the science of productivity, positive psychology. And then he was kind of surprised where all of those things led him was to monasticism and monks and the way they meditate and their mindfulness and their intentionality. And that's kind of where how monasticism got brought in, because he realized they were living out all of these fundamental truths that are now being proven by science. Like the monks already knew about it thousands of years ago.
And it's beautiful and obviously resonated with so many others, because I saw on Kickstarter it was fully funded just within hours of launching. Is that right?
It's right. Yeah, we were blown away by the support. I think it was under 4 hours we were fully funded, and we ended up with over 700% funding. It was just such a humbling experience to even be a part of it. I think it shows that there's just such a need for a system, almost like a manual and a framework for how to structure your days so that you live fulfilled. And that also includes doing more, doing things better, but also taking time to rest and really be mindful and present to each moment of your day.
And what makes it different? I mean, as I'm hearing you, that alone tells me what I need to know, that it is different than a standard planner. Because when I go into Michael's or Joanne's, I am overwhelmed by the planning section. There's like little baubles that hang from your planner now. There's stickers. But I think it's like you said, also the doing less. There's more space, the simplicity of it. And there's also the PAR method I saw. That's prepare, act, reflect. And that's meant to parallel the approach of a monk's daily life. So can you walk us through that, how that works?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this is I think what really makes the Monk Manual different. So give you an example of kind of where I was before the Monk Manual and where I was once I started using this PAR method. It makes you take a minute each day, well, a few minutes each day, to really step back and really reflect on your day. So I know this is a little bit backwards, but I'm going to start with the R here. So you've already gone through your day and you take the time to just stop and reflect on what happened. Look at your highlights, look at the times you felt great, but then also look at the times where you felt unrest and really just take a minute to acknowledge what happened and really reflect on that day that just passed. And when you do that, you're able to catch yourself. And when you do it repeatedly, you can see patterns when you go back through these pages. So at the end of each day, you reflect and then you prepare yourself for the next day. So one of the things that Stephen's really big about is plan tomorrow today, prepare for tomorrow today. So when you have just reflected on the day that happened, you know exactly what you need to do to improve tomorrow so that you don't fall into those same pitfalls that we tend to do, whether you get flustered when someone doesn't do something properly, your kids are misbehaving, whatever it is, we all have those tendencies where we let it bother us. So what can you do to kind of hedge those things before they happen, whether it's accepting something or someone for who they are, or just preparing so that you're not running out of the house last minute, taking time and setting aside the time to truly prepare for whatever you need to do.
I love that. And we were talking a little bit off the air because you are a runner, you're training for a marathon, and you know the importance of even visualization. And I, you know, the night before saying, okay, tomorrow is my early run, it's my long run. I'm going to lay my shoes out. I'm going to picture myself getting up early, being energized, being able to withstand the cold or whatever it is. And I find the same thing, that act of just visualizing, preparing, reflecting, all of that, the day before, so important. Even something so small that when I'm going to bed at night that I'm thinking about my day and how I'm going to actually put my phone away, and I have to be deliberate in saying that I'm not going to pick it up mindlessly. I have to actually like plan that I'm going to do that, which is sad. But I think it speaks to the importance of using a planner to integrate those details in.
100%. Yeah. And that's exactly, that's a perfect segue into the action. When you do properly prepare yourself, it makes it so much easier to wake up the next day and know exactly what you have to do at each moment of the day. And you can just execute on those tasks and you'll be shocked by how much, not only how much quicker you get things done, but how much better you get things done. And when you're mindful, like you said, not picking up your phone, leaving it in a drawer, or turning off all your notifications, it makes a huge difference. When I started using the Monk Manual, and that's when it comes to tracking my time. And in the first 3 weeks, I found an extra 14 hours each week.
Oh my.
And it was just, I mean, that's the real reason I've even been able to work with Stephen on the Monk Manual, is because it's that life-changing. I mean, when you think what you can do with an extra 2 hours each day, I mean, I was way
more.
What
were you doing? What were you doing with all those 14 hours?
I now get 8 hours of sleep every night. It's glorious. You don't know how important those 8 hours are until you start getting 8 hours each night.
Yeah.
And the other thing I started doing is I took time to rest, which I think we all tend to underestimate how important rest is. And I think your listeners especially would really enjoy the book. It's called The Art of Rest by Adam Mabry, I believe is the author. And it really talks about how important it is to prioritize rest in our life. And that's one thing that the Monk Manual, living that daily system, now one of my top priorities most days of the week is taking time to rest, or taking time to just enjoy carefree time with family or friends, whatever it is. It's so energizing. I think we all underestimate how important that is.
You know, Katie, it's like puzzle pieces falling into place when you said that, because we have an annual retreat called the Arise Retreat, in which Father Nathan Cromley, a friend of the show here, and also our retreat master, helps curate the schedule of the retreat weekend. And one of the big portions is holy leisure. And that's holy napping. You know, that is making rest a priority. And we do that on retreat, but why don't we do that every day? And so that's really interesting.
It really is. It's one of those things. You like, just think of how great you feel after a retreat. That's what I've been feeling like. I guess we're going on a couple months now. That's how I'm living each day, which I never would have thought was possible.
Wow.
But it's one of those things, when you're doing the right thing and you know you're doing the right thing and prioritizing your health and your relationships, and you're really checking in. That's one of the things on the monthly pages. There's check-ins for each of the major pillars of your life.
Okay.
And when you are honest with yourself and you're doing those check-ins, you can see, oh, okay, I need a little bit more time with the family. Okay, I need a little bit more time working on the spiritual side of things. Whatever it is, whatever you're lacking, whatever you need, you, when you're brutally honest with yourself, okay, this is what we need to do. Let's move forward next month. Here's how we do it. And it gives you the framework to live in that way and really be taking inventory each day, week, and month.
I think that's good because it is in the framework of a planner, because you're in the habit of checking it and remembering that you need to do that. My husband and I tried that just before we would go to bed at the end of the week. We would look back on the week and we'd be like, I forgot on Monday, Gus lost a tooth this week. And, you know, somebody else got a really good grade on a test. And our days move so fast. And especially in our particular stage of life that we're in, there's so many multiple plate spinning in the air with different kids, and you forget they just got an A on their test, you know, but we move on to the next thing and we're like, we need to stop and make sure that's recognized and we celebrate that. But then we did that like one time, 1 week, and I remember it. It was great. And we never did it again. That's, and if you have a planner that's right there in front of you reminding you, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also, you know, with the Catholic tradition, the examination of conscience, you do that before confession, you examine. But if you can do that daily or weekly about other domains of your life as well, I think that's great. And the science, I know, that was utilized in the research of Monk Manual must have been so fascinating. Is there anything that you were privy to that is particularly fascinating just about people's habits or what we're doing with our time?
It's unbelievable. The science, the neuroscience, everything. One of the biggest things that stood out to me is multitasking. Our brains, it's actually impossible for us to multitask.
Yep.
What's happening in our brain is it's actually just flicking back and forth really quickly between two conflicting actions, events, whatever is going on. So you're never actually multitasking. You're turning something on and off very quickly. And when you think about how much energy that takes, and if you were to say, okay, I'm going to try to stop multitasking and just focus, just be mindful on this one thing. That's really where you can start saving, finding 14 extra hours each week, because you can do things so much quicker. That was a big one. Another big science aspect of it was forming habits. So a lot of people think that it takes forever to form a habit, or it just seems like a very complex thing to do, to break or start a new habit. Really, all it takes is about 30 days. If you are mindful and you are working on just one habit for 30 days. So with the way the manual is set up, you pick one habit each month and then you list it on your monthly pages and then you remind yourself of it each day. Mm-hmm. And then there's a habit tracker each week. So you really hold yourself accountable to it. So at the end of the year, you have 12 new habits that you've either incorporated or you've culled.
It sounds life-changing, and I don't try to use grandiose terms, but it's true.
It really is. I walk around smiling now.
Well, I have been smiling too. I'm like all day. I'm so excited about this because you actually, and with the approval of Stephen, are offering our listeners a really special promotion. Can you share that? This is a big deal.
Yeah, Stephen was so, I think humbled is just the key word, that you reached out to us and he wanted to offer your listeners a special 10% off discount through the end of the year for any orders of Monk Manual you place. So there's bigger discounts as you order more, but that 10% will apply no matter what other discounts are already there on the table.
I've already ordered one. I have two more that I'm about to order. And you know, the reason why is because the more that I look into this and the more that I've studied, I feel like even my teenager, there isn't anyone this isn't for. All the people in my life, whether they're already organized or whether they're struggling with that, I think could really benefit from this. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, the mail must go through. The mail must go through. No matter if it rains or snows, the mail must go through. I said the mail.
Just pulled up an email from Chaya, one of our listeners, chiming in from last week's show. And she said, hi, Brooke. Happy Advent. I wanted to share something that's been very fruitful for me lately. I felt the Holy Spirit, or perhaps it's a liturgical fad among homeschool moms, to pray the novena to St. Andrew. Now, this is much longer than the typical novena, starting November 30th and continuing until Christmas. It's sometimes also called the Christmas novena. novena. I wanted to interject that. My friend, Brother Richard, was sharing that. She says, it's a short prayer, and you're supposed to pray it 15 times a day. Now, I have never finished a novena. Well, I think I finished Mary Undoer of Knots once, but I thought I had no hope of being faithful to this novena. I wasn't even going to try to start. And then my friend, she found beautiful artwork with the prayer on it and saved it as wallpaper on her phone. Every time she picks up her phone to check the time or Instagram, the prayer is there, calling to her. So I did the same thing. It's got to be at least 15 times a day that I pick up my phone. And sometimes I feel I'm in a hurry and I can't say a small prayer, which I know where the thought of that is coming from. So I force myself to slow down and to pray. Oh my gracious, the graces that flow. I thought this would be right up your alley, and perhaps you would like to do the same. And the picture she attached is really beautiful. If you, I'm sure, do just a search for the St. Andrew Novena and then click images, that you could find that. But I love the idea of saving that on the phone, having that visual prompt, and letting that be an invitation. Thank you so much, Chaya. And that's also a beautiful segue into our next guest, because she is also a homeschool mom. And this is a segment I think you're going to want to get a cup of coffee or tea and relax and sit down with a notepad and paper if you have it handy. So really excited to bring you some of her favorite things, her picks on today's program. Check it out.
Hello. Thanks for having me here, Brooke. Okay, so before I even go any further, I do want to have the disclaimer that, yes, we have calico critters and we have like Barbies and action figures and whatever the newest kind of thing is, because I do value that. I value choice in kids. And if they're interested in things because maybe their friends are playing with something, I think that there's a little bit of importance in that. Though sometimes if there's a toy that I don't think is going to last the test of time per se, I will have my kids earn the money for that so they can kind of see. So I'll come back to that in a second.
Okay.
But as far as like the gifts that I give, I really like to look at them holistically. Are they going to stand the test of time? Can they be played with in multiple ways? Can they be used for multiple ages? And then in different ways. So for example, a game that I bought years ago that we still play with all the time is Rush Hour. Rush Hour is a one-person logic game. And when I first bought it, my oldest was a little too young for it.
Which was what age? How old?
So for a gifted kid, which is what I typically talk about and deal with, I would say like 5, 6, 7 and up.
Okay.
For a typical kid, I would say, I think they package it for like 7 or 8 and up. And it's a logic game. But for the littlest kids, it's a great fine motor thing. Moving the cars on and off, playing traffic jam with an imaginative play with a board that has a bunch of cars on it, and then watching older siblings use the cards to solve problems and then kind of age into that. We have another game called Gravity Maze by Think Fun that's very similar. It's like a marble run. Well, my 5-year-old has been playing that just like a marble run since he was 2. He'd get game out and he'd sit down and he'd put things in and he'd try to make a marble run. Well, yesterday he pulled it out and I said, you know, you're old enough to play this the right way. So let's try a couple cards together. And we pulled out card number 1, beginner card number 1. And we worked through that one together and he did 2, 3, and 4 by himself. So that's a game or a toy that can have multiple purposes over multiple years and many, many children.
Rule number 1 for Colleen Kessler's terrific toys would be like it has multi uses for multi ages.
Yes.
And also, it sounds like, obviously, the cognitive aspect. It's got the strategy. But like you said, to do like the Pop-It game, sorry, that's fun, too. That has its place.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And then that one can, you know, those kinds of games, Monopoly, even though, my gosh, sometimes I just want to like poke my eyes out when I play that one. Or Sorry, or the Game of Life, or those kind of timeless games. Those are perfect, too, because everybody knows how to play them. And so everybody can play to some degree, or you can put a toddler or preschooler on your lap and be a team to play it. And so the whole family can join in with a bowl of popcorn and middle though. And then as far as toys go, I prefer personally and professionally open-ended. you know, something that isn't going to do it all for you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a doll that does everything for you. I would prefer, you know, a doll that doesn't make noises or isn't animatronic, which brings me back to that idea of, if a kid really wants something because their friends have it, valuing that, but not necessarily compromising my ideals. So my 11-year-old wanted this really kind of creepy animatronic doll thing that her friends had, and it was like $70. And that is outside my budget, period. And then on top of it, I knew that the reviews weren't great. People get tired of it. Eventually, like, one of the eyes sticks shut, so it's even creepier. And I wasn't going to spend the money, but she really, really wanted this. And so I said, you can spend your money on whatever you want. And here are some jobs that I need done for you to earn money to go along with the money that you already have. And she did. She worked hard for it. She cleaned out a friend of ours car before their vacation to earn money. And she bought this animatronic creepy doll and played with it for, just as I predicted, about 3 months. And it has sat on the top of her dresser ever since.
But what a great lesson, though. And When you talk about peer pressure, then how do you feel about introducing the video games? Because, you know, the vast population, especially of boys, I'm thinking of my own kids, and just the chatter about Fortnite and the Xbox and the whole thing. Does that ever have a place? Do you even have one of those systems?
So, yes, I think it has a place. We actually don't have a system. My kids do play games on the computer, but I'm also an anomaly in that I also don't have TV. That being said, my kids all have Minecraft, even my five-year-old. I think that we're in a time period where they have to be able to play those games and know about those games, because, especially if there's like building involved and things like that, because they have to be able to think in algorithms and programming language and things like that and be comfortable at least. But to piggyback on that, we don't have Fortnite. They played it at friends' houses, which sometimes you have to trust that your friends and their parents, you know, are going to do right by you. We've had situations that we could have a whole episode on at some point that hasn't worked out in our favor, but they've played Fortnite and they've played other games, but we don't have any in our house. And they know that I prefer them not playing that. And actually, I don't know that my 11, 9, and 5-year-old have ever played those. I'm pretty sure it's only the 16-year-old.
Yeah, and I think also there's no deficit there, because it has been so rich in whether it's Rubik's Cube, the Discovery. And I guess that leads me to strewing and something that I saw on your Instagram. I think that has to do with kind of an organic learning playing, but could you explain, tell us what that is?
Absolutely. And I have a post on my site that is an invitation to join a 5-day email challenge to introduce kind of strewing into your own family. And while the term originated with like radical unschoolers, people who don't subscribe to any curriculum or really any parenting strategy or whatever, we've kind of adopted it in more of an interest-based way of enriching our lives as a family, as well as our homeschool, because we homeschool. Essentially, like, strewing boils down to spreading a feast of learning, spreading an opportunity. So if you think about sitting down for a feast, think about Thanksgiving, which was recent, you put all of these dishes out on the table, and every person who comes to the table chooses whatever it is from that vast spread that brings them joy, that fills them up, or that they love. And they do with it whatever they want. They might pile like a big mound of Jell-O and a teensy tiny portion of turkey, but that's part of the beauty of that feast and that opportunity to come together with that bounty. And so strewing is the same premise, but using like a play-based or interest-based approach to learning or enriching our family. So I'll leave things out from time to time, and that could be as simple as like a pile of books on a topic, or you mentioned, and we could talk about this one specifically, I just recently put out a container of yarn, different colored yarn, and a loom. I started it and then just left it. And then actually throughout the day, I would go to it and I would weave a couple rows, and then I'd go away, and then I'd come back and somebody else would be weaving a row or two. It could be like, you know, a rock collection with some magnifying glasses and rock guides. It could be a new game, some building supplies, really totally open-ended, or something with a purpose. Like once I put out building materials and blank books, and I wrote, build a story for me. So there was a purpose to that, like build something and write a story about it. But the key to strewing and piquing your kids' interest in this organic way is to go to it with no expectations. Our best Thanksgivings and holidays are when we don't expect, we know our kids are going to fill themselves up on junk. And it's one day of the year and they're going to enjoy their time with their family. They're going to run around a little bit crazy. And we're all going to snuggle together, you know, with a book and our memories. And so strewing's the same way. It's still that spread of the feast. And whatever they do with it or whatever they don't do with it is okay. So back to the loom, I put that out and we've had this loom for a year and a half. I've put it out before. Nobody's had any interest in it. But I knew that, especially my two girls, they would love it.
Just to describe it, it's really inviting. It stands up vertically and it looks like it's on a tabletop. The color of yarn you have is multicolored and looks, I wanted to come over and do it.
Oh, please do. That'd be so fun.
It was really, where did you get it? I know that's a side note, but.
So it's actually just the Melissa and Doug loom. So if you go to Amazon and you look up Melissa and Doug, it's a little bit pricey. So I will say it's absolutely worth every cent. Because we had a cheap loom that we got that didn't fasten together well in the corners. And it would be so frustrating because the kids would try to weave and it would fall apart. And like their project would be destroyed and they'd have to start all over again. And so I think that's why they were so hesitant the first few times I pulled this out. Because they remembered when they weaved before, it never panned out. This is super sturdy. It's tall, so it's catchy. Mm-hmm. And I bought cheap yarn in the like markdown section of Joann Fabrics, that the kind that like changes colors throughout the skein.
Yeah. And the key too, I think, that really hit me what you just said is to not necessarily expect there's going to be an instant light bulb, and it's going to take time and with consistency and patience. One day they might like the Erector set over there on the corner.
Right.
And with, in our circumstance, and I know you know this as a speaker and an educator, every family has layers of dynamics inside the doors and walls of their home. And for us, that is a sensory and autism diagnosis that does. I feel like as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking, man, if I had a game, the pieces would be all over, or Carolina might fling something across the room. But I love what you're saying, that have a heart of curiosity and invite your kids and don't think that it's just going to be one and done and they're all of a sudden going to be architects because they're working on this, you know, Lego set, but try different things. So that's that banquet, right? Where you just have constantly things around that you bring out, but it's not a big mess, it sounds like.
It can get to be. So it depends on what you pull out. There have been times where, and this comes from, I think, either the Reggio Emilia style of learning in the early education years or Montessori, but there's this invitation to play is what they call it, or loose parts boxes. And you put like a sectioned box down and there's all sorts of different things like peg dolls and Play-Doh. And sometimes they play with it for days and they've got these big elaborate story worlds. And then other times I find peg dolls under the couch, in the gerbil cage, like everywhere they're not supposed to be. And there's like, no, we are definitely not impervious to messes. I show them occasionally over there on the Instagram feed, but by and large, I pull things back when they start to get messy.
Okay, so I want, with that and your wealth of knowledge, I want to just ask, maybe right now in your home, do you have a couple favorite things?
I do. Well, I'm loving the loom.
Okay.
It was a new, like it's an old new addition. We did, oh gosh, a couple weeks ago. So I'm teaching in my homeschool co-op, a preschool class on rocks and minerals. The day that we talked about crystals, I bought all the kids these little rock candies. And they're super small, and they're called barista size, and they're meant to stir in your tea or your coffee or whatever. And it came in a box of 100 for like $30. So I bought those, and so we have been having a cup of tea, stirring in our little rock candy and sitting there with audiobooks or the loom or those circular knitting looms where you can make hats on really easily because you're, do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly, because I need that to make anything.
I can't knit. Yes, I do too. I can't knit, but that you can easily find success with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm loving that. We have a game called Dixit, D-I-X-I-T, and it's a story building game.
Oh.
And there's these gorgeous cards that have these sometimes weird and sometimes just fantastical scenes on them. So it's like there's trickery, there's strategy. You want it to be like, so it's very creative, it's very analytical, and it's critical thinking, but it's so imaginative, and all the little kids can play, and then the big kids can take it to the next level.
Yeah, grandma can play all the way down. That's what,
absolutely.
And I think this, it's so perfect, the timing of the segment that you're on, because we are, those that are in a brick and mortar school, our kids are going to be home for a couple of weeks, and things like that can be a lifesaver, whether it is the loom or the game. What was the name of that one? one you just talked about, the magnet maze?
Oh, okay. So Gravity Maze.
Okay.
Gravity Maze was the marble kind of run maze. Actually, okay. So if you look up Think Fun, any games by Think Fun, they've got these amazing one-person and two-person logic games. And they're every single one of them is better than the other. So let's talk about some of those older kids. Because like you said, you know, your listeners who are at a brick and mortar school, they need things to do with their kids over the 2 weeks that they're home. So Think Fun has escape the room games.
Oh, they have two, yes. They
either have two or three. I have something for you. We've got to hook up anyway, but I could give you our two. Because you can only play them once.
I'm not saying no to that. Oh, really? Oh, then you know. Yeah.
You know the solution.
Right.
And so we've done it. We had friends over one like wintry day last year, and we had hot chocolate and graham crackers, and we worked together to solve the mystery and escape the room. And it was so much fun because the little kids had no clue what was going on, but they could feel the excitement of trying to solve the ciphers and the clues. So Think Fun's Escape the Room games. They're totally family friendly. You could play it like all the way up to great grandma.
You know what? I love it because the older kids sometimes can be really hard to impress, at least mine. And if they're playing the games all the time that are designed for the little ones, I know what'll happen is my older ones, especially one in particular, he'll say, I'll be right back. Or I'm going to the bathroom. And they like, where did they go? That was like a half an hour ago.
So
this is, I mean, that genuinely sounds like it's, you know, a great game with engagement. And I went, just as you were talking, to thinkfun.com and saw this looks really cool. This one called Shadows in the Forest that you play at night. Do you know this?
I don't know that one yet, but my friend has it and she says her kids are loving it.
You play it in the dark, it looks like.
They just got it to do a review on it, actually. And she said it is so much fun. The kids want to play it every night. So, yes, I've heard really great things about that. But anything by Think Fun, you absolutely can't go wrong.
Okay. I'm going to put that as maybe favorite website, too.
Yes.
So, and it sounds like that. I was going to ask you what game schooling is. And it sounds like it's just like it sounds. You're learning through play and recreation and purposeful gaming.
Yes. Yeah. So right now, my youngest two are upstairs with my husband to kind of keep quiet while I'm recording. And they're playing a game called Royal Roundup, which my five-year-old loves. And it's basically an addition and subtraction game. But there's knights and coins, and it's right there at his age. But then everybody else can play it too because they can complicate it for themselves.
I think that might actually be my level when it comes to math. So I'm going to get that for my family. Go. I love it. So, I mean, I feel like you just brought us like a Santa bag for our mind full of all these goodies. And I know we can find out more at your website. It's raisinglifelonglearners.com. But I want not only everyone to check out the content, but your podcast too. There was one episode that I saw that I want to go back and listen to. And that was about the differently wired kiddos, and particularly the holidays. Your wheelhouse is gifted kids, twice exceptional, and those that have sensory processing disorder. Yes. So can you even give us like one little snippet about that? Because I was really intrigued by that title.
Yeah. And you know what? You know how you get these notes every once in a while here that just make you keep going.
Yeah.
So I just got a note through a private message on Instagram today, actually, from somebody I didn't know. It was the first time I'd ever heard from her, first time she ever commented on anything. And she said she just finished listening to that episode and was crying her way through it because it gave her permission to do what her kids needed for the holidays. And so basically the crux of that episode is it is your responsibility is to your kid, and your normal when you have a differently wired kid. And that includes all those different neurological differences, autism, sensory processing disorder, ADHD, any combination thereof, giftedness, or any of those things. And so it's that whole idea of we had these ideals before we had kids about what we would and wouldn't do. And, you know, God gives us exactly the kids we need to challenge not only those ideals, but to grow as people and to become closer to Him. And remembering in those moments that our job right now, our calling is to be the person for our children, the safe place for them to land, so that, you know, when we stand in judgment at some point, we can say we did for His children exactly what we were given them for the exact purpose we were given them. And so having a toolbox in your bag, if that includes a Kindle, whatever it needs to be for your kid to be able to have, you know, a safe place.
I relate to that. And you know, I mean, we are friends and we walk together. And so how can we find that episode and hear the whole unfolding of that?
Well, you can go to raisinglifelonglearners.com. /podcast. It's either podcast or podcast.
I saw it today. So it's like a whole tab for it. You can't miss it.
It is. There's a whole tab. I don't remember the exact episode number. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
And you can listen right on iTunes. So
and
you can subscribe in iTunes and then you can, you know, download it or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast.
Thank you so much. Merry Christmas. I'm going to go and have some little rock candy with my tea and order some games for my kids.
There
it's going to be the best Christmas ever. So thank you so much.
Yeah. I will talk to you soon.
Wow, I told you it was jam-packed. Today was a doozy. It was a full one, but it's that time of year, and I hope that it's all good, that you feel blessed and not overwhelmed, inspired, and especially with the invitation to check out the Monk Manual. Thank you again to Katie McIntyre for joining us. Thank you to my friend Colleen Kessler, and everything she mentioned is linked up in the show notes, so we will have that for you. A big thank you to my producer, Mark Cumming, from Cumming Home Studio. He is a producer extraordinaire and wears many hats, so for any audio needs you might have, check him out at cumminghomestudio.com. Friends, we have one more episode until the end of the season, and this time around, as we focused on some of the creative gift ideas and favorite things, we are going to focus on the spirit, the heart, and the power of prayer as we wrap up our season next week and rejoin you in January of 2019. God bless you. God bless your Advent. Remember, you can always reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Feedback at Good Things Radio. And a big thank you to all of our GTR good friends of the show, our Podbean patrons that keep this show going and growing. If you're not familiar, just click the link there on the show notes. You can support the program like a tip jar. No amount is too small. No amount is too large. And it's really flexible. So blessed to have our Podbean patrons continue to believe in the work of Good Things Radio. Until next time, friends, God bless you. Have a full, rich, holy Advent, and we'll catch you next week. Peace and love.